This is A Closer Look with Rose Scott. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Since 2012, the Georgia Aquarium has been in limbo when it comes to its proposed acquisition of 18 beluga whales from Russia. Now, the application was denied by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the federal agency a lot of people just call NOAA, and this was the NOAA fisheries part.
And Dennis, earlier this summer, the latest beluga whale calf to be born at the Georgia Aquarium died. It was less than a month old. So far, at least five beluga whales housed at the Georgia Aquarium have died. And tomorrow, a federal judge will hear from aquarium and NOAA officials as both sides will present oral arguments. Now, the Georgia Aquarium is hoping the U.S. federal government will approve their permit to be a part of importing those 18 beluga whales to the U.S. from Russia. Well, Scott Higley, who's the vice president of Georgia Aquarium External Affairs and Government Relations, well, he recently told WABE he believes bringing the belugas to the states will help in their preservation.
Belugas are in trouble in general. The species is listed by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature as near threatened. As scientists, it's really important for us to have them in a zoological setting because we're trying to find out why all of these things are happening so we can work to, you know, conserve and protect them in their natural habitats. And a lot of the work that we need to do and the information that we need to compile can only be done in a zoological setting.
Now, backing NOAA, and they've also joined in the case, is the Animal Welfare Institute. Dr. Naomi Rose is a marine scientist with the Institute, and she joins us now. Dr. Rose, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you just heard Scott Higley talk about the importance of the work needed in order to protect the whales, saying that it can only be done in a zoological setting. What's your response?
Well, very little critical work for conservation is being done in zoological settings. Cetaceans in particular, whales and dolphins and porpoises, have a lot of differences when they're in captivity, both physiological and behavioral. So they're not necessarily the best models for what's going on out in the wild anyway. But just looking at the literature, there's not as much research coming out of captive situations as there is in the wild. The wild, in situ, is where the cutting-edge research is being done.
You know, when NOAA denied the permits to the Georgia Aquarium to import more beluga whales, do we know exactly why and what did they cite as a reason in denying those permits?
Well, by law, they have to be very clear about why they deny these permits. And they made it very clear that there were three essential elements, by law, that the Georgia Aquarium did not meet to legal standards. So basically, the Georgia Aquarium, as a permit applicant, did not meet its burden in terms of meeting those standards. So one was they did not sufficiently explain how this import would be sustainable. They did not sufficiently explain that. They did not sufficiently explain how this import would not lead to additional takes and would not lead to additional harm to the population. And then they also, for five of the animals, did not sufficiently explain how they determined they were not nursing at the time of their capture, because that's illegal. You can't take nursing calves. And the permit applicant itself, the Georgia Aquarium itself, said these animals were only a year and a half old at capture. And the science is that belugas are dependent on their mothers for nursing up until the age of two. So that's a weird one, because I don't know why the Georgia Aquarium would try to fight that. They told us themselves that these animals were only a year and a half based on their size.
Let's take a couple of those points, though. The population one first. The aquarium believes that the denial of the permit by NOAA actually ignores 5 years of what they call population abundance research, which they say was included in their application. So what do you know about that research, number one? And number two, do you think that it's valid?
Well, they did do 3 years, not five. They may have eventually done five, but at the time of the permit application, the study that the Georgia Aquarium and others had financed was only 3 years old. And that's important work. You know, they need to do that sort of population-level work to determine whether a removal is sustainable. And they finance that, and I give them credit for that. However, you can't just say because we did the work you need to give us the permit. The whole point is you do the work to determine whether removals will be sustainable. You have to look at your results and live with those results. And if they actually indicate that it's not sustainable, you have to live with that too. And in fact, the work they did determined that the population is at a level that is severely below, extraordinarily below, where it was historically, by up to 70% below where it was historically. That's a huge drop in population. And so, again, by law, that's not a standard that allows import to occur.
But if
so the point is they did the research. I give them credit for that, but they didn't want to live with the results they found.
All right, but if the aquarium, say, let's assume for the moment that they were to be approved for these 18 belugas, it sounds as if opponents are arguing that, okay, that's just going to open the door to Russia perhaps taking more belugas. Yeah. Why should the aquarium be responsible for something that might happen in the future and try to prove that it wouldn't happen? I mean, how reasonable is that?
Right. That's putting it that way, you might argue that that's not a terribly reasonable standard, but that's not the standard. The standard is it likely to happen? Likely is a term of art in the law, and it is used in a lot of different contexts, and it's a workable standard. It's something that has been used in the past and can be used here and was used here. And in fact, just so you understand, because the capture operators in Russia saw the U.S. as a possible client, as a possible market, after the George Aquarium put in its permit application, they quadrupled the number of animals they took. The next 2 years, quadrupled the volume of captures because they thought the U.S. was becoming a market. So, in fact, that likelihood, which the government relied on, came to pass.
In talking about the Georgia Aquarium being able to sustain the lives of these beluga calves, you know, we asked Scott Hagley about that, and this was his response.
That's actually a very common situation with marine mammals. You know, these are air-breathing animals that are born underwater. And so they face challenges right off the bat. And, particularly in the wild, things are tough in the ocean. The unfortunate situation with our calf is primarily due to a genetic issue that animal experienced. And, you know, the thing is, death is part of the natural life cycle, and it's always devastating. Our people dedicate their lives to the care of these animals.
So, Dr. Rose, in that clip, he's saying, look, basically, this is part of sort of the circle of life. This is part of what happens with these calves. One, do you agree with that? And two, if that is the case, then obviously is there more research then that just needs to be done outside of an aquarium?
Well, in response to your last question, yes, there is always more research that needs to be done outside an aquarium, and that's my whole point. That's where the cutting-edge research is being done. Secondly, the aquarium and the industry, the public display industry in general, has this very bad habit of saying the situation is really grim out in the wild. It's so much better. They're safer in our facilities. We feed them. We care for them. We're very careful about how we treat them, and they get veterinary care and all of that. And then when an animal dies, they say, oh, that's just the circle of life. That's just nature. Well, either it's safer in captivity or it's just like nature. They can't have it both ways. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is to say that the causes of death are the same in captivity and in the wild is just intuitively illogical. Obviously, they don't have predators in captivity. They don't have pollution in captivity. They don't have food shortages in captivity. They don't have hunters, ship strikes, entanglements, all these human-caused sources of captivity in the wild, in captivity. And so, again, it's not logical to say that it's natural for our animals in captivity to die because that's how it is in the wild, because clearly the causes of death have to be different. And finally, for them to say that, you know, life is tough out there in the wild, well, then why are they trying to remove animals from the wild to put them in captivity? That's the whole point. It is actually kind of rough out there. I'm not denying that. And so we shouldn't be adding to that problem by capturing them for aquariums.
Dr. Rose, you just raised the question of why we would have them in aquaria, and I mean, I'm going back a lot of years, but the first time I ever went to an aquarium, the first animal I saw, I remember it vividly, was a beluga whale. And the argument is often, look, one of the reasons why we have belugas in aquaria is not just to do research, but to educate people. lots of people in ways they wouldn't be able to get otherwise. They can actually see these creatures and care about them and get involved in their conservation. Isn't that an absolutely valid purpose for having something like the Georgia Aquarium's beluga exhibit?
I would agree with you if I had proof that it was true. I mean, I respect the fact that you recall that and that that was important for you. But in fact, people don't really retain too much of what they quote-unquote learn at a facility like that. They don't actually change their behavior. There's no evidence of that. And I just point to reality. The fact is these species are declining. They are in trouble. The wild is becoming a difficult place for them because of all of the human-caused impacts to it. These facilities have been around for 50, 60, 70, 80 years. I don't think they're working. And if you ask me, they're actually part of the problem because they convince you, you as a member of the public, that they're on the job, that they're taking care of things, when in fact their first purpose is to, you know, support themselves. And I don't think, and granted, the George Aquarium is not a for-profit facility, but they still have overhead. The fact is that they aren't being very effective at changing people's behavior. They might enlighten people. They might temporarily give them a feeling that, you know, I know more than I did yesterday. But it's not sticking because as a person who's working in the conservation community, I can tell you I'm working with a bunch of people, but with the general public, that actually are pretty unaware of how bad things are out there. The George Aquarium has millions of visitors a year. They're not being very effective.
But aren't you asking them to prove a negative in a sense? In other words, asking them to argue, okay, here's what would happen if we weren't here.
Oh, no, not at all. What I'm asking them is to prove that what they're doing, the education they claim they're doing, is in fact effective. You can go out and survey people and do testing, and actually there are tons of metrics you can use. That's how educational systems measure whether they're being effective. There are metrics you can use that allow you to know whether you're actually having a permanent impact, a positive permanent impact on your customers. And in fact, they have nothing like that. They've got exit surveys, and people tell them, oh, I learned a lot today. But what did they learn? And later on, did they actually change their behavior because of what they learned? These facilities don't do those sorts of surveys.
Dr. Rose, you will be flying to Atlanta. You're going to be part of that. You'll be in that hearing tomorrow. Let me ask you this. If the Georgia Aquarium wins this hearing, and as a marine mammal scientist, then what do you fear most?
That it will set a precedent that will allow a lot of other animals who are currently roaming free and are with their families and are, in fact, living in an environment that does have its problems but is, in fact, where they were born and are evolved to thrive, are going to be captured and put into facilities in China, Russia, the Middle East, and, quite frankly, the United States. They are starting to capture orcas now in the Sea of Okhotsk, and I'm very concerned that will increase if the U.S. is perceived as a market. It is not a trade that the U.S. should be a party to, and it is, to me, reprehensible that the Georgia Aquarium is pushing the U.S. to become a partner in this trade.
Well, given
an inhumane and unsustainable trade.
Well, then on that note, then I think I may know the answer to this. Then how much do you think then this needs to really become more of a policy, a federal policy, and that Congress needs to step in?
Well, they have. The law worked. The law actually functioned as it was meant to in this case. The government denied the permit. What's shocking to me is the George Aquarium is not abiding by that and is, in fact, fighting the government on this point. They are basically mocking, in my opinion, the very important law we have here in this country, the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
Let me ask you real quickly, coming back a bit to one of the provisions of that law, you mentioned nursing, that the aquarium could not show that these animals were not nursing still because some of them were 1.5 years old. Question is the burden on them to show that they're not nursing or on NOAA to show that they are, especially given the age where I guess they're, if I'm not quite sure of the exact science here, but the age is at a point where they're maybe nursing and maybe not.
Well, that's a very good question. And in fact, the burden of proof is on the applicant. And that makes sense when you think about it. The burden of proof should always be on the user, the one who wants to exploit the resource, not on those who are protecting the resource. If it was the other way around, we'd have a lot more exploitation and a lot more trouble for these resources, these animals, you know, these whether it's fish or marine mammals or coral or anything, right? So appropriately, when Congress wrote this law back in 1972, they put the burden of proof on the applicant. So it was up to the Georgia Aquarium to meet these burdens of proof, and they failed. It was very simple. It was, you know, there were these three particular points that they failed to meet their burden of proof. The government denied the permit based on those three points. And now, for some reason, the Georgia Aquarium is arguing that they should have gotten the permit anyway.
And Rose asked you a little bit about what happens if the aquarium should win. If they do, would you expect that NOAA would appeal and continue the court fight, or would you and other advocates do it if NOAA doesn't?
I would fully expect NOAA to appeal, but for what it's worth, and it's just my personal opinion, the Georgia Aquarium isn't going to win this case.
You're confident.
Their arguments, I've seen their briefs, I've read what they've written, I know what their arguments are, and I've been doing this for 22 years. I'm not a lawyer, but I am an advocate, I am a policy expert, I am a marine mammal biologist, and I'm telling you, they're wrong.
Okay. Dr. Naomi Rose of the Animal Welfare Institute, we'll see, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you,
really
Dr. Rose.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really grateful you're covering this story. I think it's great.
Thank you.